Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This is the time of year when parents are finishing up coordinating summertime activities for their kids. And if you're one of those parents, my guest today is going to advocate for summer sleepaway camps. In fact, he says it's one of those very important developmental experiences that help your kid develop independence, values, and social skills. Michael Thompson is a consulting school child psychologist, a best-selling author of 8 books on development and parenting, probably best known for the book Raising Cain on the special challenges of raising boys. And his latest book is titled Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. It's published by Ballantine Books. Thompson said he expected to write about a variety of away-from-home experiences, but after visiting 19 camps, interviewing 17 camp directors, program directors, hundreds of counselors, parents, and campers, he quickly honed in on what he called the magic of camp. Camp is where most children have their first away-from-home experience, where they experience their first bout of homesickness, where they discover their inner resources, their own true grit, so to speak, and where they first begin to develop a sense of true independence. He joins us today to talk about the magic of camp here on Studio Tulsa. Michael Thompson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
Let me ask you, are parents and families getting away from sending their kids to stay away summer camps these days?
Well, 6 million children per summer go to sleepaway camps, so it's not as if people have forgotten about them. But camp directors are telling me that they're getting lots of parents who call and say, well, she's ready to go, referring to their 10 or 11-year-old girl, but I'm not ready. Camp directors are getting more parents who want to be in email contact or cell phone contact with their kids. It turns out that the parents are having more trouble sending their kids away. I've seen it in my school consultation work, where the fifth grade science camp, there are more parents saying, well, I can't let him go unless I'm a chaperone. Or they let the child go, but they send them with, you know, a huge bag full of vitamins and medications and an inhaler, which the kid never asks for. But the parent is, you know, so there's something going, parents are having a harder time letting their kids go.
Well, you know, and I think schools see this as well. You're probably familiar with the term helicopter parents, which is the parent that hovers over the child, even in high school and college. Colleges are having a difficult time dealing with parents who, you know, and even with privacy laws, they're not necessarily allowed to be in the conversation unless the child wants it, but yet the parents are there.
Right. I don't love the phrase. I know I've heard it many times, and I may have used it myself. I don't love it because it's a little contemptuous. And I'm a parent myself, and I know how much parents worry. So I don't like to have disdain for parents.
Yeah.
But I do understand that there's some parents who confuse their own child sickness with their child's development. You know, they think, she won't be able to do this. And what they really are thinking is, I won't be able to do this.
And this whole idea of parents being involved, more involved even in a stay-away camp, this sort of gets back to the idea of free play, that a lot of parents do not allow their kids to just go outside, have a good time. You know,
I talk about this a lot in Homesick and Happy. It used to be 20 years ago, 80% of kids walked or biked to school. And that's down to 13%. So children used to, even just walking to school, used to have time away from their parents. Maybe it was only 10 or 15 minutes, but that's 20 minutes, half hour a day. And now you're constantly in a car with your parents, and you're in town sports. You're constantly being supervised. A camp is actually one of the last places you can get away from adults. Well, that's a scary idea, that you send your children away and they're not being looked after by adults. Well, they are, but they're actually being looked after by 20 and 21 and 22-year-old young adults. And camp's the last place in the United States where 11-year-olds spend time with 19-year-olds, and 19-year-olds are happy to spend time with 11-year-olds. We live in such an age-segregated society with so little mixed-age free play that when you go to a camp and watch a game of Capture the Flag. I was actually at camp this weekend, and I was playing it. I'm 65 years old, and it's the most fun. I can't run like these kids, but I can defend the flag. Never mind, that I digress. When you see mixed age free play in the evenings at a camp, and you realize that the kids are just having the experience of their own life and their own development without having to filter it through their parents standing at the sidelines. Does Dad think I'm playing well in the soccer game? Does Dad think I'm doing well in lacrosse or ice hockey? When you're in town sports, the kids have to think, what's my coach think? What's my parent think? How am I doing? Are we winning? And when you go to camp, it's not school. It's not town sports. There's an enormous amount of silliness. And there are very, very powerful relationships that develop in that freer atmosphere.
I would think of that sort of mentor-mentee relationship in that mixed age, you know, the counselor versus campers. But what does the child learn from being in those sort of mixed-age situations?
Oh, they learn just a ton. A younger child gets to see the pathway to growing up. Rich, let me put it this way. What's a better way to inspire a child to be college-bound? Is it for you as the parent to say to your child every day, work hard, college is so important, you need to go to college to get a good job, or to have them live in a cabin for 3 weeks with a college-age student who is cool, beautiful, handsome, cool, funny, and a college student? And I think that kids so want to see the pathway to a loving, productive adulthood. But having your parents tell you all the time gets a little tiresome. To go and live with a mixed-age group of people, have fun with them, do skits with them, learn skills from them, learn how to kayak and whitewater canoe and horseback ride. I don't actually think it matters that much what you do. One camp director said to me after reading Homesick and Happy, he said, you hardly mention program at all. I said, you know, hey, I'm interested in what happens to kids when they're away from their parents in relationship to these young adults. And what they're doing doesn't matter that much from a psychological point of view.
So you called it a roadmap to launching, really.
I believe that. I promised my publisher I'd write about semesters abroad and boarding schools and stuff like that. And then I realized most kids' first experience, sustained experience away from home, is a scout camp, campfire, girls and boys, you know. Most kids' first sustained break with their family is at camp. So I focused in on camps, and I visited over 20 of them. I've eaten more grilled cheese sandwiches and corn dogs than anybody my age. And you remember Fudgicles?
Yeah.
I've eaten a lot of those, too. All regrettable, but I had an enormous amount of fun watching the creativity of children doing skits. You know, dumb campfire skits are really different from a school assembly, which has to be rehearsed and practiced and respectable. And you can't bomb in the school assembly. But you can try a skit one night and it doesn't work, and you figure out another skit, you know, two nights later. You get to practice in a low-stakes environment at camp, and you get to tackle your homesickness. And that's why I called my book Homesick and Happy, because there are a significant number of kids, 19%, who really do experience some severe distress being away from home. And there's a smaller band of kids, 6% of the total, who have homesickness that never leaves them for the whole time. And they're kind of the heroes of my book, because most of them, a majority of them, go back to sleepover camp. Mm. And one woman in Toronto said to me, oh, I had a terrible first year at camp. I was so homesick, she said, homesick. And I said, why'd you go back? And she said, I knew I had to beat it.
Wow. That's the sort of kid you want to raise, right?
But I think all kids are like that. Mm-hmm. I asked my own son, whom I knew had been pretty homesick when he first summer he went to camp. I said, well, why did you go back to camp? And he said, because you wanted me to, Dad. And I said, all right, I did, but you didn't fight me very hard. Why did you go back for a second year? He said, Dad, if you can't learn to sleep away from your home, It means you have to live with your parents for the rest of your life. Right?
Right, right.
You know, it's true. If you can't learn to sleep away from home, you got to live with your parents. And most kids want that developmental achievement.
Well, let's talk about homesickness. If you know, you mentioned it's a big problem for about 20% of campers, a really big problem for about 5 to 6%. What are the strategies for overcoming that? I mean, do kids just figure it out?
Well, the conventional wisdom always has been that you get to camp and you're a little bit homesick and you get diverted and engaged, and in 3 or 4 days it passes. And that's true for about 81% of kids. Incidentally, homesickness is universal. Everybody has some homesickness from mild to severe, but homesickness means you have parents who love you and a home worth missing, which you can always tell the kids. You know, if you didn't have a home worth missing, you wouldn't be homesick. But anyway, 81% get over it in that 3 to 4 day period and may have mild forms of it later, but it's easily comforted. 19% have significant distress that spikes at different points, and the 6% have some pretty, it gets a lock on them. Now, the thing you do is, as your child's approaching camp, you make sure they have sleepovers. They need practice being away. The single best predictor of success at camp and practice for camp is sleepovers. Hmm. And preferably more than one night. So at friends or go to an aunt or uncle, have a sleepover, that's good. The second thing is for the parent not to dismiss it. Say, yeah, you know, honey, I think you probably are the type of kid that's going to have some homesickness, but I think you'll get through it. So it's an honest acknowledgement that it's likely to happen and conviction that your child can surmount it.
My guest today is Michael Thompson. He is the best-selling author of Raising Cain, a consulting school psychologist. His latest book is titled Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Let's talk about that subtitle a little bit. We mentioned the fact that because of the counselor system, they're sort of seeing a rollhood into early adulthood. But what are some of the ways in which a child grows from that time away from parents? What are some of the things they learn at a camp?
Well, you learn that you have to manage your own friendships. You have to live in community with other people. You're sharing a cabin with other kids, some of whom may be stronger and more capable in certain ways than you, others who may be crying in their pillow at night and need your comforting. But the adults don't do everything for the kids. The kids have to learn to live in community and take care of each other.
And, you know, for some kids, that's not happening until they go away to college, if they don't have this sort of experience.
And I think that's too late. I'm sorry. You know, by the time my son went off to college, he'd made camp friends, and he'd lived as a camper and then as a counselor for a total of 6 summers. And he went off to college, and he didn't have any trouble. It's not that he didn't occasionally miss home, but he knew how to live in community. And he knew how to tackle things without always looking over at his shoulder anxiously at his mom or dad. You know, when you're at camp, your mom's not there and your dad's not there. So you do it, but when you achieve it, it's yours and yours alone. Because I did it without my mom and dad. Now, Rich, I've been asking people for 10 years, sort of leading up to this book. I speak to parents throughout the year and giving various talks. And I ask parents, what's the sweetest moment of your childhood? Tell me the sweetest moment, or think for a moment, the sweetest moment of your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd say, for how many of you were your parents present for that sweetest moment? And only 20% of adults raise their hand. I may have done this with 10 or 20,000 people in my speaking. And, you know, the 20% who raise their hand say it's Christmas or Thanksgiving or the family vacation, and that's great. But 80% of people, I say, what's the sweetest moment? And they say, well, there was a big rain, and I was with my friends down at a creek, and we were building a dam, and the water was pretty high, and it was kind of exciting, and we got all wet, and my parents didn't know where we were. It turns out that the sweetest moments of your childhood are very often where you're doing something a bit bold, even risky, away from your parents. I had an Indian woman in New York tell me she was raised in India, very protective culture. The biggest moment, or the sweetest moment, what she just chose to tell me was her parents let her fly from India to visit relatives in the United States and change planes by herself in Frankfurt. This is before they required kids to be accompanied.
Right.
She changed planes in Frankfurt, and she was 9 years old.
Yeah.
And that was the sweetest moment of her childhood.
I remember that was a few of the times when I felt most like an adult. It was I rode a bus across state when I was pretty young by myself, and then flew when I was fairly young by myself. And I remember that being, you know, just feeling like watching all the adults who are on the plane and sort of trying to fit in. Yeah, it was a great learning experience.
But you were very proud of yourself. I did
right.
it.
Yeah.
I was on my own. Nobody was watching me. And I just think that the achievements you make when you're on your own are a bigger boost to your development than the achievements you make with your parents watching. I know that's kind of heartbreaking for parents, but I believe it.
Well, one of the things that we're talking about, some of the skills that kids learn, are there, besides just learning how to live in community, are they learning things that, we expect well-adjusted adults to have in their arsenal from being away?
Yes. And I went to many camps where kids could absolutely recite the rules of the camp to me, or the code, the character code of the camp.
Morals.
You know, mm-hmm. Yes. And I think kids who are in nature develop really deep, sacred feelings about nature. And children cut off from nature is a big problem now. And they go to camp and they develop a kind of an intimate relationship with nature. And it's hard to actually develop in the city or the suburbs. So that's another reason children should go. I think you use your body all the time in a very healthy way, in a non-competitive way. Mm-hmm. You know, swimming, it's not a team. It's not a competition. You just did the swim period every day, the end of every day. And that kind of exercise is different from town sports because it's not goal-oriented. It's just recreational.
Now, I want to ask you a question. Why summer camp as opposed to... For example, I never went to summer camp, but I did go to music camps growing up. Is there a difference between the summer camp experience and, say, a vocational camp? Nowadays they have everything from screenwriting camps, filmmaking camps to vocational things.
I'm sorry, how'd you like music camp, Rich?
I did like music camp, but I'm a nerd that way.
You're a nerd. I had a producer in New York call me and say she went to Interlochen in Michigan,
yeah,
played the violin.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I always feel like I really missed camp, the true camp, because I went to this serious, serious music camp. And I said, well, I'm not sure you missed it. Did you have campfires at night? Did you get to sit around with your friends? Did you have fun away from adults? Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, but she said we played a lot of violin. And I said, I know, that's music camp. But you had a camp experience by being away and living in community with other kids. You had camp around the violin stuff. And what troubles me now is that parents, instead of sending a child to one camp for 3 weeks, they'd rather do 3 one-week skills program, you know,
mm-hmm.
Nike tennis camp for a week, and then there's computer camp for a week. And the relationships can't develop between kids and counselors. It's all about the skill set and not about the relationships. And I think that the most important thing about camp ultimately comes down to the relationships, having people outside your family who know you, care about you, have watched you master something, and have cheered you.
So it's being in that sort of peer relationship with other campers from about 17 to 12, plus having that older mentor.
Yes. And that, if you had, I have a chapter in Homesick and Happy called The Magic of Camp, and I list 10 things that I think are magical about camps. I'm kind of in love with them after spending time at 21 camps, I think it was, in the last two summers. I really did kind of fall hard for them.
Well, tell us a couple of them.
Well, I went to a couple of camps in Texas. One occupies a whole chapter, and it's a camp for very seriously ill kids, kids with cancer. I went to a camp for kids with HIV/AIDS, and one of the girls described it as, she said, everybody deserves a piece of paradise. And that was the camp. I went to canoeing camps in Ontario that have a seven-week trip to the Hudson's Bay, where they paddle up hundreds of miles, and at the end they see beluga whales and maybe polar bears. And the basic elements are that they're in relationship to people who are not that much farther ahead of them on the scale. The kids who paddle up to the Hudson's Bay have to be 17, 18 to do it. But they're with instructors who are just 29 and 30. There is something about reaching ahead to counselors who are, and having them reach back to you when there's a smaller separation. It's really different from what is between a 15-year-old and a 45-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your parents, of course, and most of your teachers.
Right. Well, one of the 10 reasons you think camp is really special is the fact that it is not school. And that's these vocational camps, they tend to be a little more school-like.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yep.
And why is that? Why is that not having the school experience important to what you're trying to get at?
School is tests and evaluations, and are you building a resume, you know? And camp, you're learning things for the pleasure of it. My son went to an arts camp, and there were kids who just spent hours and hours and hours doing leather work or making jewelry or glass blowing, which is dangerous. Those ovens are 1,200 degrees. It's tricky. It's dangerous. It's challenging. But they're not glass blowing so they get into a good college or do well on their APs. That's pure love.
Yeah, they were learning something different and learning something cool and interesting. Yeah,
and they're learning something your parents don't know. Right?
Right.
And if you were standing in front of a glass blowing oven with your mother or father watching you, they would be going, "Oh, honey, you know that's hot. Step back."
My guest today is Michael Thompson. He's the author of Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Well, earlier in our conversation, you were talking about that your publisher wanted you to mention boarding schools and semester abroads. Now, are these the same sort of experiences?
Well, it's very interesting because in my Magic of Camp chapter, I think the opening sentence is, if I remember correctly, camp is Hogwarts, right?
Mm-hmm.
The most popular children's books of all time have been about a boarding school. But less than 0.1% of kids in the United States actually go to boarding school. What is so attractive about boarding school, Rich? Why is the greatest children's book of all time about a boarding school?
Because it's an alternate universe for most kids.
Indeed. That's exactly right. And I go on to say camp is as close to Hogwarts as any kid ever gets.
Right.
And so I gave up writing about boarding school because it's such a rare experience, in fact. But the dream of boarding school, an alternate universe where you are free from your parents and your terrible aunt and uncle, as Harry was, and you and Hermione, you know, if things happen, you can have adventures. And so I went back to my editor and said, look, I don't want to write about semesters abroad. Those come maybe at 16 or 17, the earliest. I want to write about the first adventures away from the family. And she said, I get it. Do it. You have my blessing.
And I would think a semester abroad probably follows a camp experience for the most part, because nobody's going to go away for a semester without at least knowing they can live without their parents for a couple of weeks.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, I've interviewed... I interviewed a boy in Arlington who went just on a couple of night overnight science trip, and he was a very nervous guy, and he was a life changer for him. Mm-hmm. On the same day, I interviewed my administrative assistant's daughter, who went just on a very short trip to Japan. It was a complete life changer for her. Not easy for the parents to let them go. You know, if you have a child who the parents have to let go.
And that's a hard thing for parents to do. Is, you know, even for summer camp, much less a semester abroad, I think the feeling is, you know, if I create a child that is that independent, I may never see that child again when they're an adult. And of course, that's probably a childish sort of reaction, but it is a you know, sort of primal fear, I think, for most parents.
Yes, it is. You know, I'm not there to protect them. I get it. I really do understand it. But what happens is you have a child who comes back more confident, more grown up, more changed, and with interest that you couldn't possibly have anticipated. Do I have time to give you one more little story?
Sure.
I sent my daughter Joanne off to camp when she was 12. She went to a camp in Vermont, and I had to pay extra money for horseback riding. She'd been horseback riding around here for 4 years, and she loved horseback riding. And I paid really an extra bolt of money. And she came home after a month. I said, "So how was camp? Good. It was great. How was horseback riding?" She said, "I didn't do it." I said, "Joanna, I paid a lot of extra money." She said, I didn't like the counselor." I said, "What'd you do instead?" She said, "I loved the sailing instructor. I went sailing every day." And I'm thinking, what happened to my money here? But my daughter was telling me, "I'm now different than the child you sent off. I didn't do what was prescribed. I found somebody I liked." And to this day, my daughter's now 27. She's made me a grandfather in the last year. She considers herself the best sailor in the family, the one who really knows how to sail in this family. And she is.
And that's a great thing that she learned at camp.
On her own.
Yeah. The name of the book is Homesick and Happy. Michael Thompson, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, I enjoyed talking with you, Rich.
Michael Thompson is the author of Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. It's published by Ballantine. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent shows, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org, or you can subscribe to the Studio Tulsa podcast at the iTunes Store. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
On Wednesday evening, May 2nd at 7 p.m., Booksmart Tulsa invites you to Oklahoma City, What the Investigation Missed and Why It Still Matters. At this event, which is free to the public, investigative journalist Andrew Gumbel will explore the impact, legacy, and lessons from the deadliest act of domestic terrorism in American history. For more information on this event, which happens at the Savage Art Gallery in Tulsa in the Pearl District at 2205 East 6th Street, you can go online to booksmarttulsa.com.